presented by the Citizens.
Yes, indeed. Welcome to another episode of the Brian's World Live Podcast. I'm your host, Brian James, author and radio host here on the East Coast, out of Baltimore to be to the exact. Episode 163. A lot of good information in this one, man. Conversations about resiliency and determination, how confidence is kind of related to competitiveness. And also, we get an up-close and personal view of what it was like to develop and harness a friendship with the late Nipsey Hussle. Joining us for episode 163 today is June Summers, who's making his rounds, pushing his latest single, GPA. This season has been special, yo. I've been loving, like, just all the information that we've been tapping into, man. And this episode, I think, is going to be it's going to be another great addition to it, all right? So, enough of me, man. Let's do it. It's 2 a.m., baby. The blue light is on.
It's Brian's World.
We're the most different right here. 2 in the morning.
So let's start with four words to describe you. What you got?
Four words to describe me. I think the biggest one is resilient.
I love that. Wow.
Yeah, resilient. Crazy. My father says that to date. He says it's like one thing he's always admired about me just growing up and stuff was that I was always the type that even if I fell, got hurt, whatever, like I'm hopping back up. I brush my clothes off and I'd jump back in the race. You know what I mean? And just hearing him say that, it always was related to, like, I thought, like, sports. I played a lot of sports coming up. So
okay. Basketball or football or both?
I played basketball and football.
Okay, nice.
And I played ball, too, in college. A couple years in college, I played ball.
That's what's up.
I was on super athlete mode. Wasn't no music or none of that. I still had NBA dreams at this point in time. But yeah, it just now just relating it to just other things in life as a grown up, you know what I mean? I see that, you know what I mean? And, so yeah, my number one would be resilient.
Yeah.
I think my number two, be a hard worker. You know what I mean? I'm a grinder.
Work ethic. I like it.
Yeah. Like no matter what it is, it could be an idea I came up with in 3 o'clock in the morning in my sleep. You know what I mean? I'm up, I'm working on it. You know, I'm all day if I got to, day and night. You know, my girl, you got to understand, hey, I got stuff to do. I'm trying to get it done. Hard working for sure. Third would definitely be a dreamer. Like I'm a dreamer.
I'm
always from just all type of stuff, music to whatever. Just like I'm a dreamer and I'm always optimistic about it. So I would definitely say that probably is my fourth. You know, just being optimistic in situations and always having a mindset that I can do it. You know what I mean? Or like, you know, if said person did it, that was my proof that I can do it for sure. Humans breathing air, it's like I'm breathing it, was able to do it. So, you know,
You always optimistic or, you know, like, or is that something that's passed down to you? Like, is your family, you know?
Taught. I think it was something that I was taught just from experiences and just going into certain things, trying to be optimistic and, you know, things working out to where, you know, it was something that I kind of adopted, you know, through the years. And I think it just has made me stronger. So the more that I get back from being optimistic, it builds up that character in me even more so every time that I use it, to speak. Optimistic for sure. And then last but not least, I know you said four and I got five.
It's all right, we take a bonus word. We good.
Yeah, and this one is I take great pride in this one, too, is I'm compassionate. You know what I'm saying? I think that just helps me in just day-to-day life, you know, just being blessed for situations, blessed with situations and opportunities. And,
yeah,
you know, the more that I care about the next person and the more that I can try to contribute whatever I have, to, you know, whether that's, you know, just time, conversation, you know, might be a couple dollars for gas. I may not know. You could be a complete stranger. You know what I mean? But
you got a big heart.
If I take the time to listen to you, I'll help you if I can. You know what I'm saying? So,
gotcha.
Yeah, that would be that for sure.
Now, let me ask you this. In terms of the optimism, I'm still kind of stuck on that. In terms of the optimism, what has that done for your circle, for the people around you?
I think that the people around me that haven't been as optimistic just over time and just, you know, I think it's kind of rubs off on people.
I love that.
You know what I mean? It kind of rubs off to where it's just like, you know, the same things like, dang, you know, June do be saying that too. Mm-hmm. Like, or like, you know what? Or just being in the situation. I don't want to hear nothing negative. Like, I don't want to hear worry. You know, and I'm a religious man. So like, even like the Bible, crazy. My mom just said this. My mom said it to me the other day. She said that the Bible says something like, rejoice before the war is over. Mm. Like, so like, rejoice like you won. Mm-hmm. Like, you might not even started the fight yet, but you need to be celebrating like you won already. Yeah. Give me that celebration type of thing. You know what I'm saying? So I think that's just a good mindset to go in. You know what I mean? You ain't, you're less worried about getting, you know, hit with a cross hook. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah.
You're thinking about how you can be damaged. You know what I mean? Like, nah, it's about like putting your best foot forward and just, you know, going like, and just mm-hmm. being like, yeah, I'm gonna win. Or, you know, it's going to work out in my favor.
It's interesting because optimism kind of works out for me the same way. It almost gives us a no other opportunity, no other chance but to go as hard as we can to succeed, period. Because it's like
exactly. We
kind of attached to that optimistic view of whatever the situation is. And it's like, I don't see nothing else. I ain't really necessarily worried about the failure. You know what I mean? Like, I just want to, because right. I feel like as long as you give it your all, you good, you know?
Good, you good, you know what I mean? So yeah, bro, that the optimism is huge. Optimism is very huge and just life in general, but it's greater than any battle, whether that's putting out a new single or, you know, about to do a show, about to do a live performance in front of, you know, 5,000 people. I ain't thinking about what if I mess up, what if I forget the words, or, you know, what if,
man, all it takes is one all it takes is one of those negative thoughts and you have an anxiety attack or something, you know what I mean?
Yeah, you planted the seed. Somebody planted the seed.
Yeah, interesting.
Water, it's gonna grow.
Yes, 100%. Now, in terms of resilience, is there something in your, I'll say, music career that has really brought out that that resiliency in you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I think one of my first and biggest ones was just coming from where I'm from upstate New York. So mm-hmm. I'm from
what part?
Upstate. Rochester.
Rochester. That's what's up, man. Yeah, I was on the radio in Buffalo for a year.
Oh, okay. So yeah, you already know, like just coming from making it out of that environment to where you can be, you know, I can go to a New York City and still, you know, have the same traction when I hit the ground, still have the same drive, the same, you know, I ain't shying away from nothing. I'm, you know, I'm going at it. Like,
yeah,
I think that having that, it's humbling too, because it puts you in situations that may not have turned out the way that I wanted them to at that time.
Right, right.
Those were instances that I could have been like discouraged. You know what I'm saying? I could have used it as a discouragement, or I could have used it as you know, a crutch on why I'm not putting out music right now. You know what I'm saying? Instead, I would leave. I've been in label meetings and I done left like arguing.
Straight up.
Straight up arguing. Like, I don't care. I ain't even tripping on the deal. We don't even got to speak the next time I see you on that type of time, just because, you know, especially at the time I held my music and my career so dear to my heart. Mm-hmm. I would take offense depending on what you said and how you said it. I could totally be offended, like like straight up.
Yeah.
So I think that caused me to, you know, and that goes back with the resiliency thing, like, you know, just being knocked down and having the energy and having the drive to get back up and go knock on some more doors. Mm. You know what I mean? Then eventually saying, you know what, these meetings ain't going how I want them to go. I'm gonna do this myself. Or, you know, I'm gonna look at a different route with this. You know what I'm saying? I'm gonna explore a different way to do it. You know what I mean? So, but yeah, like I said, coming out of upstate New York was hard enough. You know?
Oh, I'm hip, man. Now that you said, like, yeah, Rochester, yeah.
Yeah, we got Jodeci that started doing. They're not from Rochester, but they did like a good bulk of their hit records in Rochester. Mm. We got Tweet.
I didn't know Tweet was from Rochester.
Yeah, born and raised in Rochester.
Wow, that's crazy. I did not know that.
Yeah, man, Tweet. That was the same. Really, besides that, like, we really don't got no in the music industry and even acting. All we got Tay Diggs. Tay Diggs is from Rochester.
He's from Rochester? Are you serious?
Diggs is from Rochester.
Wow, I had no clue.
Yeah, that's what it be like. You don't have no clue until you
right. Me.
And I moved around so much, G, like I chased this music stuff, like I chased it. You know what I mean?
This wasn't
Ain't nobody give it to me. I took the steps. Like my bro Nipsey used to say, like, yeah, I took the steps. You know what I mean? So, like, yeah. I really was outside.
Yeah.
Like moving city to city. I picked up and moved to New York City off of a conversation of an opportunity. Mm. Like, it's time to go. Wrap this up. We out. We moving to New York City. You know what I'm saying?
Did it pay off, you think?
Yeah, it definitely did, because of that conversation that I'm referring to was with John Shapiro. I'm not sure you're familiar with John Shapiro with Cinematic Music Group.
Mm.
He is the person that signed and has Smoke Dizza right now. I'm not sure.
Okay. Smoke Dizza. Heck yeah.
He gave Big Crit his first start. He's the first person that signed Big Crit.
Interesting.
And also, my big homie, rest in peace, Nipsey Hussle.
Yeah, I had read that you guys are connected too. I'm gonna get to that as well, because I would love to
hear
more about that. But
yeah, but that combo was with John Shapiro, and at the time it was just a combo of at the time he had Sean Kingston.
Okay.
At that time Sean Kingston was popping.
Yeah.
So, you know, I looked at it as a real big opportunity to, even like I was saying, we're coming from upstate, like just aligning myself with a real situation with real, you know, move makers, real big steppers that's actually cutting checks, getting people to cut checks. They on that. So that was like my first real alignment with somebody official in the music industry.
Was that a moment when you knew that it was going to be like, all right, this is really happening. Like the music thing is really happening. Was that your moment?
Not really. I'm gonna say, and this is another thing that helped me, like kind of gave me the confidence I needed to go into a lot of situations, even with that one.
Yeah.
Was you being, you know, DJing in Buffalo, you already know what time it is out there, like with independent artists from the city. Like it's, you might get somebody to show you love, DJ like said record. So they you know, they throw it on they mix Friday night when they do the independent artist segment, when they do the community artist segment. But I had a record that I did. And at this point, I didn't live in Rochester anymore. I had left and went to college. I went to college in Virginia.
What school you going to in Virginia?
I started with Tidewater Community College. Then I went to Norfolk State.
Okay.
Spartans. You know, yeah, the Spartans. You know what I mean?
That's so, what's up.
At the time, so I'm in VA, the guy that produced the song was pretty popular in the city just for being a musician.
Mm-hmm.
So he took it to the radio station and they started playing it. So I was just getting, like, you know, random phone calls. You know, all my family and friends still live in Rochester.
Mm.
So, you know, I'm getting calls and they're like, hey, I heard your song on the radio and stuff. But again, me being from there, I could never recollect in my years of living in that city, nobody ever getting no love. Mm. So, like, I just kind of always brushed it off, kind of like, oh, word, yeah, all right. Then sooner or later, like weeks were going by and I'm getting more and more and more calls. And eventually it turned into where I finally tuned in online. And it was on the countdown now, like the real top 10 countdown of the entire radio
station. Dang, that's hard.
Like, not the community one or nothing. And then it was even bigger because I was gone. I wasn't there. So, and I think that helped a lot, because to the people in Rochester, it wasn't like they could drive and, you know, they would see me, you know, coming from school or something like that, where, you know, like, nah, he's a regular dude, mm-hmm. whatever, you know, that'd be the mindset. So I think with me not being there, it just kind of helped, you know, build the momentum of the record. So I think the first time that I logged on online and I listened, it was like number 8.
Wow.
So that happened every week, 8 weeks, and it went to number 1, the number 1 record in the city. And I want to say it was probably number 1 for maybe like 2-3 months.
Dang.
It was a huge
in your record. hometown.
So like when I finally came back home, and at this point I kind of can see the how big it is, like
yeah.
even from where I'm at, it's like, oh no, this is for real, you know what I mean. My mom is calling me like, hey man, we're at work and your song's playing and everybody in the office is, you know, asking me about you, and like it was a big deal. So it's kind of started with that. So I kind of had a confidence with it. You know, my first time coming back doing the show, it was like super packed. You know, we had people chasing our van, like it was the whole city was up on it. So it was just like, wow. So it was just something that I had never seen before. You know what I mean? Coming from my city, like they ain't never show love to nobody from Rochester, G. Like they'll put somebody else on first and they'll play somebody else's records. But yeah, and this was back, I never forget, it was back when Neo had So Sick of Love songs. And that was the biggest record in the country, and every radio station in the country, it was number one. In Rochester, my song was number one, and that was number two.
That's fire. That's
you know what
fire.
I'm saying? And it stayed there for a good amount of time. So, you know, I started getting paid shows back home, and, you know, people would call me to come host parties. They fly me out and stuff. So I kind of got in the taste of feeling, you know, that I'm doing something right. Then, you know, which kind of, you know, propelled me even more and then led me to the conversation that we just previously talked about with John Shapiro to where it was like, oh, okay. Yeah, come to New York City, and I got some other stuff going. Then we did our research, and like, nah, this is the next step. So that's how I looked at it. Like, this is the steps that you know, you go through. Now I'm here now. I passed this first step. Now we about to go into the big leagues with, like, real labels, real industry plugs, real people. And that's kind of what prepared me for. So I went into it not necessarily with a chip on my shoulder, but I went into it already feeling like, I'm on a mission, and I already got my confirmation that people will like my music. You know what I'm saying? I got my confirmation that, you know what I mean? They like it, G. Like, you know what I mean? So, you know, I just needed his confirmation to say, yeah, they write and you write. And he pretty much did. That's, you know, with the invitation to come. So, you know, I slid out there. I signed a Cinematic Music Group, and the rest is history. You know what I'm saying?
Now, at this time, had you cemented your sound, or were you still trying to find your sound, or was that even ever an issue for you?
It was, but at the time I didn't know that. Like, it was like, I had my sound, but I ain't gonna lie, when I signed to Cinematic, I had a conversation, like, once I'm out there, and I'm out there for a couple of months, and, you know, he got me doing certain things, you know, I have 100% access to come record, do whatever, he's putting, you know, stuff together. But he came to me straight up like, yo, I've never really put out. He's like, when Sean Kingston came to the table, he was already shaking. So he was like, you know, I didn't have to build him. I didn't have to, like, create situations for him. All I had to do was manage the situations that were knocking at the door. So with me, he just came to me one day and was like, gee, like, I'm having trouble trying to think of a way, think of ways to, like, really put your stuff out on a different wavelength. Cause he's just, you know, he comes from a rap background, like, rap and stuff. And those are the people that, you know, that was his love, started with hip hop. It wasn't R&B.
Right.
But he kind of liked my vibe. So cool. And I thank him for this till this day. And he was like, you know what? Let's do this. Let's just start putting you on everybody's hooks, and we're going to, like, make you, like, the hook man. You know what I'm saying? And that can kind of help you get your notoriety up a little bit more and get you some money. Like, you know, we can get you some money for these hooks. And I remember at the time I was even tripping that he was thinking I can get money for the hooks. Like, I was that early in.
That's a compliment, yo. That's a really big compliment.
But it seemed far-fetched at the time. Still, even though I came from having my stuff popping in my own city and all of that, still people paying me to be on their hooks just kind of seemed like, wow, like, for real, you think that? You know what I'm saying? So that was kind of like his dilemma. But also, you know, him coming up with that idea to do it is what aligned so many other situations. You know what I mean? Like, so, you know, I respect him for just having that thought process, but he didn't really know what to do with me. Like, he liked me, he loved my, you know, what I brought to the table talent wise, but he didn't know how to package it up necessarily the right way. You know what I mean? Cause I've kind of always been an edgy R&B artist. I've always been the guy that walk up on the stage and people never think that I'm going to sing. You know what I mean? Just cause of my appearance, I guess, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. And
especially we talking 2000s. You know what I mean?
They're expecting you to spit.
Yeah, we talking like late 2000s. So, you know, I got baggy clothes on. I got big chains on. You know, I'm from New York, so I got this big fitted hat on.
Then you bust out in the song.
Out in the song, and they like, what? So I think that was one of his big problems. And at the time, you know, just with how music was, R&B was, R&B artists wasn't like, they're not like they are now, you know. Now it's cool, dude don't look like a singer, we like that, you know. But at the time they wanted the smooth pretty boy look. They wanted you to have a couple swirl moves with you, which you'd be able to dance a little,
some baby hair
on your joint. That's how they wanted it, and I was like the exact opposite. So and at the time there was nobody else that was you know, that was a like somebody that really could sing and that was, you know, kind of rough around the edges, so to speak.
Did that ever bother you mentally, like knowing that you different, you know, you're different than the others? Did that ever bother you?
No, I looked at it more like a weapon, because I used to rap. I used to rap like this whole music love that I have to be an artist started with wanting to be a rap artist. Mm. Now, I used to sing in church as a kid, you know,
We all started in church. That's tight.
Right. You know, 5-6 years old, I was a little kid in the front of the church that had the church going crazy. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And then, you know, naturally, as I got older, you know, I wasn't with singing in the choir no more. I thought I was tough at the time. So I'm getting tough now. I'm 14, 15. I ain't trying to be up there singing and doing all of that. You know, I want to rip and run.
Right.
So I kind of fell back from it. And then when I came back to the love of music, it came back in the form of rap. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because I was always a poet. I was always really good at poems and stuff like that. So once I kind of rerouted that to rap, I was dope at that. You know what I mean? So I used to battle. I used to do all of that. Like, I was a straight rapper. Mm-hmm. But I would start... I think my sister is a singer too. Not professionally, but just, you know, all in church.
She got a voice, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So she challenged me one time to write a song. You know what I mean? And she was like, she was going to sing it, but just write it. I think you'd be able to write it. So when I wrote the song and I kind of approached it the same way that I write raps, it was dope. And it was just like, dang, for me, it was a light bulb. And it was like, dang. So you can do that too. Like, let me explore this a little more. So I just kind of started little by little, experimenting with it a little bit more, writing songs. I'll take a break from writing raps. Every 10 raps, I might be like, let me write a song. Let me try to. So I started, as an artist, I started doing both. Like, all right, I'm going to rap and I'm going to sing. I'm going to just rap my verses and I'm going to sing my hooks. Mm. You know what I'm saying? So.
Which ended up becoming the trend too. It's crazy you did that.
Right. Mm-hmm. But that was my, I would go to like shows, you know, open mics and stuff like that. It might be 30 rappers in the building. Mm-hmm. Normally there was no singers. Mm-hmm. And if there was, we talking one or two, and the probability of them being actually good was low. Mm-hmm. So that was how I started setting myself apart. So I would go to these talent shows. I would rap my first verse, then I would just bust out in the hook, like really singing. And it automatically set me apart from people. You know, automatic, I stood out over every rapper that was out there. Whatever they did, you still remember the dude that rapped, and then he sung too. You know what I'm saying? So it kind of set me apart. And, you know, little by little, I just kind of let the rap thing go, because every time I would write a rap, I felt like, gee, what you doing this for? Like, right, you got something with the singing thing. Like, I
feel like you were getting called to act to sing.
Right. Right. And it was just like, let me mess with this. And that's kind of how it, you know, kind of how it went. But it started with the rap. And just kind of transformed into the singing thing.
So in order to have that confidence to just do you, essentially, like, I mean, it takes confidence to really get to know yourself, you know? What were some of the things that built the confidence for you?
I think that the church, the singing in church, and just having the background to where I was always the little dude at church that everybody knew. You know, I was the one that, you know, I would get requests to sing. You know what I'm saying?
So that just told you, solidified, like, yeah, right. I'm good with this.
Yeah, it kind of taught me showmanship. Like, it kind of taught me, like, oh, if I do this, they go a little more crazy. So it kind of taught me to, you know, little things, and that kind of built my confidence up over the years, to where when it finally got, you know, to that extent, I kind of already had somewhat of a confidence when I walked on the stage. But then just overall, I think just in general, thankful to God that I'm just kind of I've been an overall confident person most of my life.
Yeah. Okay. You know, see, that's what I was getting at. Okay.
Like, most of my life, I've always been kind of a confident guy. You know what I mean?
I like that.
Always.
Any of that have to do with your parents and how they raised you?
I think so, for sure. Mm-hmm. I think so, for sure. But I think that even with that, like, your parents can have a major impact on that. But the biggest impact, because, I mean, the older you get, the less time you're spending with your parents.
Yeah, sadly, you know, yep, you're right.
the less that you know what they say. I ain't gonna say what they say matters, but you know what you listen to and your life experiences are things that are gonna build up that confidence or crush that confidence. You know what I mean? And I think one of my biggest things with confidence, I think, came from sports and just, you know, just being competitive.
Yeah.
I think maybe I may be more competitive than confident,
which is funny because I feel like they got to be related. They had some sort of, they got to be cousins of some sort.
They have to be, bro. They have to be.
Yeah.
You know, even if you don't want to put the label on it as, am I confident? Yeah, I'm confident, but am I competitive? Nah, I'm not losing to you.
And you know you got what it takes to hit that jumper when you need to hit it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm not losing to you. I'm going to make sure of that. So, you know what I mean? I think definitely that they're related. But I think what I didn't have in, you know, per se confidence, I made up for in competitiveness.
I like that. That's a very good analysis. Like, you broke that down. So, you know, there's a lot of things that stick out to me, you know, about you, like just through the bio and all of that. And I know we had mentioned earlier about Nipsey, and, you know, I, like so many people across the world, man, had like, and still have, obviously, like, in just an affinity with Nipsey Hussle, man. Like, just in terms of just relating to him and just having somebody that speaks kind of the same way that you speak. It means a lot musically, and Nipsey was like that for me. We got the same birthday, you know what I mean? Like, it's just things like that. So, you know, just kind of walk us through, because this is like the closest we've gotten over here, you know, like on the show and all of that. So, like, you know, just walk us through kind of how, you know, the relationship became, you know, and then like what it was, you know, and then, you know, what it means to you today.
So yeah, like I said, I got the invitation to come to New York City from John Shapiro.
Yep.
I moved to New York.
Yep.
I'm going to the studio, you know, daily, you know what I mean, for a few weeks, and a random day I'm in the studio. He's like, you know, hey, yo, let me introduce you to this artist. So Nipsey's in the next room at the time. I don't know he's Nipsey, he's just a skinny dude. Tall, skinny dude. It's winter time. He got on Dickie shorts, long tube socks.
So clearly, he's from out west.
Straight up. So he's just like, hey, you know, this is Nipsey Hussle. I just signed him. And, you know, telling Nipsey, this is June Summers, artist. I just signed him. I want y'all to work together and, you know, and see what kind of, you know, songs y'all can come up with. Just telling Nipsey it could kind of give you a different appeal to, you know, different records, different beats.
Yeah.
But, you know, at the same time, just kind of like, you know, I think it'd be good for y'all just to at least go in and experiment.
Yeah.
And we went in and, you know, the first record, the very first record that we ever did was still one of our most popular records, a joint called All Money In.
Yep. It's at the top of the on Apple Music. I've seen
it. All Money In. That was the very first record that we ever, same day we met each other, we did that record. So.
Wow.
We hit it off like immediately on the music side. Immediately.
So, how long we are in there that day? Just curious.
It was an all night affair. Every time we went,
I figured that. That's tight.
We was in the studio. We might go to the studio at 12 noon and not leave till 5 in the morning the next day. You know what I mean?
That's probably what y'all had in common. One of the things that y'all had in common is that work ethic. You know, that was one of your four words. You know what I mean? So, and I'm pretty sure that's one of his as well. You know, so
100%.
Yeah.
Just from there, just kind of just we just kept working, and kept putting out music, and you know what I mean. And even like I was saying with the hooks, this was all part of Shapiro's plan. Like, you know, just do the hooks, and you know, so. It was like, cool, you know, now we got Nipsey's project. Nipsey's project was a priority at the time. On the rap side, this is before Big Crit came into the picture. This is shortly after Sean Kingston. No, matter of fact, this was the end of the Sean Kingston era at Cinematic.
Okay, gotcha.
He was still there, but he wasn't there for much longer once that started. Like, he was gone a few months after that, maybe. So, you know. He would go into these meetings like, hey, so yeah, this is what we're doing. We're doing a Nipsey project. June's doing all of the hooks. If there's a hook that needs to be done, he's doing them. And that's how it was. You know what I mean? I did all of them pretty much. And if I didn't do it, on any Nipsey project, probably, if I'm not the guy that's actually singing it, more than likely I wrote it. You know what I'm saying? One of the bigger ones, I think the first single, the major single that they put out was with Lloyd. I think it was called You Gotta Make It, I think. That was one that I wrote, but it was, you know, it was I understood it. I wasn't mad that they wanted to put Lloyd on it, nothing like that. Because one thing about Nipsey is a super loyal dude. Like,
yeah.
Yo, dude was like, loyal, bro. Like, he ain't care, bro. Like, about nobody else. We had a funny story with Drake, right? So I went years and not liking Drake over this personal situation. I'm about to tell you.
Oh, okay. So it ain't got nothing to do with music.
Nothing.
Okay.
I had to let it burn over the years and come to terms with it myself. Like, it, you know, happens. It happens. There's no hard feelings. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But so Drake took a liking to Nipsey kind of early. You know what I'm saying? So he sent Nipsey a verse, just Drake on it. And he's like, hey, Nip, you do a verse, we're going to put it out. So we at the studio, Nip lays his verse, and Nipsey like, hey, June, do the hook. Cool. I'm like, let's run it. Cool. I go in there and I do the hook. He sends it back to Drake. Drake called. Drake like, hey, I love it. But he's like, yo, who the dude on the hook? You know what I'm saying? You know, Nipsey like, that's my dog. That's June Summers. Whoop. So Drake is like, yo, I mean, I love what he did, and none of that ain't nothing against him, but I ain't giving no looks to nobody unless I know him personally. At the time, like I said, I get offensive. I take offense to, is the, like Erykah Badu said, I'm an artist.
I'm sensitive about my
stuff. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So at the time, I just felt like he was hating on me. Like, dang, why you hating on me, bro? I'm just trying to get on too. Like, this little bitty hook that I can't just do one hook. Gee, you put out a million songs. He was, at this point, he's still a big artist. This was new. He's a new artist, but he still, remember, he came in like a wrecking ball.
Yeah. Right?
So, you know, I just was kind of like, you know, I just took it the wrong way. And so, like I said, for a few years after that, I kind of was just, every time a conversation with bro would come up, it was just like, what? Drake? Man, whatever. I don't mess with him. Turn that off.
But you know what, though? Don't forget, you was younger too, bro. Like, you know how we be when we was younger, you know?
Right. Yeah. My mindset was a lot different. Definitely, you know what I'm saying? Definitely. Like, and again, like, even, you know, at the time, I was so close to my music. You know, it just was, you know, people used to ask me to write back then. It's before I even thought about writing. I play somebody a song, they'd be like, yo, this is dope. Won't you sell that to so-and-so? Nah, gee, I would get offended. Nah, I'm not giving these dudes my sauce. Nah, I'm cool. I'm keeping this. This mine. This me. You know what I'm saying? Until I got a check. Once I got a check, then
that changed everything.
You know what I mean? It was everything's for sale first. But yeah. At the time, I wasn't trying to hear that. You know what I mean? So, but yeah, like, so that's that situation. But just going back to Nip, I love Nipsey G. Like, that was like a so much bigger than music, because just even fast forward, Epic Falls Apart, and that was who Shapiro had the cinematic imprint through.
Got you. Okay.
Epic. So Epic like fell apart. People got fired, and everybody kind of got out of their deal. So Nipsey was one of those ones that, you know, was able to get out of the deal too. He wiggled out of it. So now this is post John Shapiro. So we have no direct connection to, you know what I mean, like to continue to work together.
Yeah.
You know,
and I'm everything kind of
it just like dissipated like in a thin air, and it happened real quick too. This wasn't like a long process. This feel like this happened like overnight, like, and just it went from, you know, it just went to dust, you know what I mean? So
and you're still living in New York at the time, right?
Nah, at this time, oh yeah, I'm in New York.
Okay.
Definitely. I'm in New York City. So cool. But that kind of, like I said, dissipates. Cinematic is kind of all over the place trying to rebuild, because Epic is all over the place trying to rebuild. So we both get out of our deals. Nipsey goes back to LA. You know, I'm still in New York, but it's not underneath John Shapiro anymore. It's not a cinematic move. But like me and Nip, we still tapped in. Like we super tapped in still. Let me tell you before that. Nipsey's first tour and my first tour as well was Nipsey, The Game, and J-Rock.
Right, it's a heavy lineup.
So this is his first tour ever. So he does maybe the first three shows or whatever like that. And I think the fourth show was in Virginia, in Norfolk. So I slide back up to Norfolk, like, all right, yeah, it's here. You know, I'm just pop up on bro and them. I pop up on bro. Soon as, you know, and this is before, like, I ain't talking to him every day. I'm trying to pop up on a sneak tip. You know what I mean? I'm just sliding.
Yeah.
So I slide, he like, bro, you here? We got to rock these shows. Cause he was doing already like two or three songs that we did together on his set every single night. So he like, we got to perform together, bro. We got to do these on the stage. So I'm like, cool. So we do that show. And at the end of that night, he like, bro, you got to come on the rest of the tour. He like, nah, you got to come on the rest of the tour, bro. We got to do this every single night, bro. Every night, let's do this. But they're on a tour bus. So they're like, nah, not like in the morning. Like, we're leaving after the show. Mm-hmm. So, like, I don't know what you got going on, but I want you to come with us.
Everything canceled. Everything canceled. It's time to go.
Gee, so I'm like, cool. So he like, all right, after the show, he like, all right, go get your pack your stuff and then meet us back. But they on a like a tight tour schedule, and their tour manager is on it. Mm-hmm. And I don't know him at the time, which at the I didn't know him, but that is now the great Steve Lobel.
Wow.
I didn't know who this was. I wasn't familiar with Steve Lobel at the time. I didn't know nothing. You know what I'm saying? And he was all about Nipsey. So Nip is like, yo, hurry up though, cause dude on it, you know, just hurry up. So long story short, I miss him. They end up having to get on the road before I can make it back to hop on the tour bus with them.
Wow.
So cool. Me being me, I'm like, cool, bro, where y'all going? What's the next stop? He tell me the next stop. I fly there in the morning. Very next morning, I fly out there. I beat done to the city. Cause remember, they driving.
Yeah.
So by the time they get there, I'm already at the hotel, in the lobby, got my bags, got everything, got my little video camera, because it's my first tour. So I'm in the lobby waiting. They pull up and it's love. Everything is we on. Cause you know, everybody that Nipsey used to come with, Cobby Supreme, Robin Hood, Rand Paul, all of his closest people. At this point now, like, these is my homies. Like,
you in the family from
York a million times.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And at this time, I haven't been to LA yet. You know what I mean? I don't know nothing about LA, but you know, we moving around. So that was just like a huge experience for me, just going on the road with bro. Like I said, it was his first tour too. We was touring with the Game and J-Rock. So you know, just being with all of them, J-Rock there, and this is before Kendrick Lamar, he was K-Dot.
Just getting started.
Right, but nobody knew who he was yet. J-Rock was the moneymaker at that time. But J-Rock, Absol, what's the other one? Dang, I forgot the other one name.
Schoolboy wasn't on that, was it? Oh, Schoolboy, yeah. Schoolboy Q.
Like, all of them is these dudes every day. So it was just a real cool experience. You know what I'm saying? And just doing, you know, city to city with bro. Like, and you know, you can go on YouTube and see a lot of these shows. It was called the LAX tour. So, you know, most of these shows, you know, Nipsey would, you know, cut the music, do his speech. Hey, yo, I want to introduce y'all to my boy June Summers, yo. Pull me up, you know, arm around my shoulder. It's my dog, June Summers. Y'all make some noise. Drop the beat and we would just go. And that's what we did every night for the entire tour. So like that kind of like really, you know, we were building like memories and history at the time and didn't even really know it. You know what I'm saying?
Just great to say, like, doing all of that and probably had no clue what was happening.
No clue, bro. Mm-hmm. So like now, that's why like I cherish those moments so much. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
not even just because the world now sees him as the legend that he started out being from the rip, but just because it's like, gee, like, you know, those are moments that can never be duplicated.
Mm-hmm.
You know, never. Just being that it was his first one, it was mine, you know, all the
it was raw.
Yeah, the problems that go on tour, you know, we had a tour bus and so did the Game, but you know, clearly our tour buses wasn't the same.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we had more like a camper. You know what I'm saying?
And the they Game had, like, probably had the big Prevost bus.
Yeah, with, you know, 10 sleeps 10.
Yeah. You know, got the studio on there and everything.
Right, right. We had the joint that slept. You know, it was one bed in the back. Everybody else probably kind of had to get it how they lived on like the little couch areas and stuff. This is before we knew that the heat on the tour bus that we had needed propane. And we wasn't up on how much propane costed. It's crazy. Like, we was freezing on this tour bus, bro. Like, we in Aspen, Colorado. We in all type of places, and it's cold. Like,
going through it.
Bro, we on the bus with whole bubble coats on and blankets, and freezing still. You know what I'm saying? So, like you said, it was just raw. And it was like, you know, but looking back on it now, it felt like a tour, like in the 90s. It felt like this was backstage, the backstage documentary with Rockefeller, like back then. Mm-hmm. Like, it was just so, it was raw. You know, a couple people got beat up in a few cities and all that type of stuff.
Sheesh.
Yeah, it was just raw. Yeah. A few people got beat up. We went to a couple situations in a few different places out there. But, you know, that kind of comes with the road.
I was just going to say, I can imagine, like just being on the road, the risks of doing all of that and getting into those situations is high.
Yeah, especially when you're a whole gangbanger.
Yeah, you know, that's just going to happen. You're
a gangbanger, G. Like,
facts.
The good thing I will say, that the Crips in every city used to be out there, G. Like, security. They would be outside
holding down.
Like, gee, we ain't even coming inside. We gonna stay outside and make sure nothing happened. Gee, we don't want no tickets or nothing. Like, we outside. We just making sure y'all good.
That's big.
You know,
is there something that he said to you that you still hold on to today?
I mean, so much, but like specific, I think I hold on to more of what I saw him do or saw in him versus what he directly said to me.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I've always admired about Nipsey, and I always said from the gate, was he spoke so well. Like, he, the same way that when people look at interviews that he did, you know, the last year or so of his life, the last few years, 2, 3, 4 years or whatever, he talked that same way when he was 17. You know what I'm saying? Like, he always had a knack of
being mature,
his point across, and not sounding dumb. Like, you tell, like, that he wasn't slow by far. Now, he may be quote unquote uneducated in terms of, you know, diplomas, degrees, and stuff like that, but you could have a conversation with dude for 30 seconds and know, like, oh, nah, all right, he ain't no dummy. Like, you know what I mean? This ain't no dummy. So, you know, I kind of always admired that, and, you know, just kind of watching him do what he did, you know what I mean, day in, day out, and just having his own mindset and knowing how he wanted to do his project, and you know, being able to stop the session right the moment that he felt something was wrong, voice what was wrong, not like a, you know, argumentative, but just being able to voice that something is wrong, and then you know, having the words effectively to get his point across.
Yeah, confidently. Mm-hmm.
Of how he wanted it to be. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That's vital.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because you might know how you want it to sound, but you can't tell somebody that. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's harder to explain it versus just to feel it and, you know, have confirmation off of what you're hearing. You know what I mean? But, like, it's a lot harder to be like, all right, stop it. I want it to be more da-da-da-da-da, or I want to put more of this in it and less of this. You know what I mean? He was real hands-on, you know what I mean? Like, really hands-on with, like, everything he did. So, you know, I always took a liking to that, always.
I appreciate that, man. I feel like you just shared a lot of good information, for real, and the things that you learned from Nip, and you know, and it's dope to see that you still living that out too, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I got to. You know, Nip was, when I first went to L.A., I tell people all the time about L.A., like, L.A. used to seem like Africa to me, like, in terms of, in distance.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or even in terms of ever going there, it kind of seemed like it was so far in distance and just far-fetched of an idea. Mm. So, you know what I mean? At the time.
Because again, it's all the way over there.
And I'm Rochester, New York. People that I'm with, I'm around every day. These folks ain't never been to L.A.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, especially at this time, ain't nobody going to LA that far, you know. So, but my first time ever going, you know what I'm saying, Nipsey on and homie Cobby Supreme picked me up in the airport in the 6th floor, doing donuts in the middle of the street, you know, all that. So I got, like, a real, you know, so many good memories, man, that I always keep, G. Like, you know, I remember my first time out there, he just telling me the ropes. Hey, you see all these Mexican restaurants? Only eat ones that you're familiar with. You ain't never heard of it, don't eat it.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? And, you know, hey, and this, don't park your car down that way, because those the ops on 3 streets down, yeah, and they'll get you, because they know you close to me. So, hey, nah, just teaching me the ropes with stuff, just how to move in LA. And, you know, it got to the point where I was out there so much, bro. Like, I used to roam around LA free, like it was Rochester. I could ride up on Crenshaw and Slauson, leave the car running, hop out. Hey, people at the gas station, let me, hey, June, what up, bro? Yo, love, bro, what up? Like, they making sure I was good. You know what I'm saying?
And all of this is after you didn't even think LA was possible.
Exactly.
Crazy. Exactly. I had no clue what y'all was doing on tour, but
had no clue.
There you go.
Bro,
there you go.
Like, it was like that.
Yeah, man. So let's jump into GPA, man, because I want to know, you know, about the writing process behind it, you know, and I know you've seen like some Grammy success too, Grammy nominated and all of that, and I want to hear kind of how, you know, all of that ties into GPA and bringing us to where we are today. So, you know, how do we get to GPA? What, you know, what happened behind that record?
Okay, so I'm currently based in Atlanta. I signed an independent record deal with a company out of Florida called Hustle House.
Okay.
So when I signed the deal from Hustle House, they straight up asked me, like, hey, so like, what you want to do? You want to stay in New York or what? So I'm like, really? I kind of want to go to Atlanta. Because I just left Atlanta with Nipsey for the BET Hip Hop Awards down here.
Mm.
He performed with Duro, Jim Jones, and Snoop.
Yeah, oh, I'm hip.
So I had just left, and we stayed on for like 2 weeks. So I kind of had got a dope vibe for Atlanta when at my first time coming, I was kind of like, oh, yeah, this is dope. So I tell them, like, yeah, I want to go to Atlanta. They moved me to Atlanta, put me up in this big house out here. Everything's good. Everything's good. God bless the dead. The guy that owned the label, which is my boss out of Jacksonville, Duval County. He met his early demise.
Wow.
And it kind of, you know, I mean, naturally it threw everything out of whack, out of sync once again. You know what I mean? Yeah. It was kind of like a whirlwind. So fast forward a little bit, you know, I'm in Atlanta, but now I'm pretty much by myself. Because now, you know, he's not involved anymore. The label is trying to, you know, get their stuff back together because he was the guy. Like, he was the main force, everything, the financing, he was everybody. Everything. Mm. So I was just doing my own thing, putting out my own stuff, you know, still on it. And I got tired. I got tired of this, and even coming down in Atlanta, and I felt like I was starting over. Mm. I had to come play the Chitlin circuit with people again. They want me to come do stuff. And now that I get here, they're like, now you got to pay me such and such to perform. And oh, now it's open. I'm like, gee, I'm not doing all of that.
Yeah.
So I kind of got tired. And I was like, you know what I'm about to do? I'm about to fall back for a minute, and I'm just going right. So I was in that stage for probably about 3 years where I didn't put out no music. I wasn't doing no June summer music. All I was doing was writing. Mm-hmm. And in this time frame, we linked with Music Soul Chop.
Yep. And that's when the Grammy comes in.
Right. And Music didn't, he was doing the hustle. He didn't even want to be Music Soul Chop anymore. Like when we first linked with Music, it was like he was tired of music too. Just the whole industry. And it was like, you know, he was trying to reinvent himself. So, you know, we was able to, and he says this, he gives me and my writing partner, J-Rell, most of this stuff that I did on the writing, and I did with my brother, J-Rell. So we were kind of on him, like, bro, we want to do that music stuff, Music Soul Child. He's like, nah, I want to do the hustle, which was like, he wasn't really singing. It was like auto-tune on it. You know, it was just what me as a music fan, I didn't want to hear.
Yeah.
I wanted to hear, you know, love and my buddy, I wanted to hear that type of music, Soul Child. So long story short, he ended up giving us the opportunity to say, all right, cool. If y'all can reproduce my first album sound, I think that I'd be back motivated to do it. So we ended up coming up with a few records. He got to where he was like, yeah, all right, cool. I like this. Like, let's keep doing it. So we ended up building the entire project, which is called Feel the Real.
Yeah.
Five or six songs on that project. I think we had the first two singles and everything. So that gets nominated for a Grammy, Best R&B Album, and ultimately gets beat by Bruno Mars. This is when Bruno Mars had just hit with that album with 24 Karat Gold, whatever that song was. But he was killing the game. So, all right, cool. We get the Grammy nomination, and I'm still on just the writing mode. I'm writing for a bunch of people. Mr. Probs, you know, we linking with
everybody. Yeah, I seen that too. Yeah, Mr. Probs.
Yeah, we linking. Mr. Probs flying us out to Amsterdam for weeks at a time. We just working. So,
Now he's Grammy nominated too, or was something Grammy that y'all did? Grammy Award winning.
By the Wave song. Wave after wave.
Yeah. Wave after wave.
Yeah, slowly
drifting. I love that record, man.
That was like number one in crazy amount of countries. Mm. You know what I mean? He's actually the highest selling artist in the Netherlands history.
Interesting.
So we bouncing around, you know, and for me it's enough because I'm close enough to the music industry to where I can get my fix, so to speak. Mm. But I'm still don't care about being an artist at this time again. I'm still like, nah, I'm cool. I'll just do this, get these checks, and that's it. I ain't worried about nothing else. Mm. So to GPA, what happened with GPA is shout out to the homie Sean Garrett. Mm. Sean Garrett comes through to the studio with an artist that Ellie Reed dropped in his lap, which is Avery Wilson.
Avery Wilson, okay.
So Avery Wilson comes into the picture, and he's like, to date might be the best male vocalist that I might ever heard. Like, dude is, wow. Yeah. So GPA was a song that I wrote for Avery to cut.
Interesting. To put on
his album.
Wow.
Now, like, that was the entire, I had no mindset at all that I would put this song out for myself. It was never intended for that. But what happened was when I referenced the record, I referenced it, and by the time it's time to play it and like put it in motion, not sure exactly what happened with Sean Garrett and the situation with Avery, but he wasn't working his project anymore. Mm, so,
and this is, you know,
he was
this
moving
is how
around.
Recent? How recent is this?
My bad. This is maybe 2 years ago.
2 years ago. Wow. So you had this record. Wow. For that long.
Easy 2 years. Easy.
Yeah.
And dang, this is crazy. So, all right. I do it. So one day, so it's still just in my email. It's a song that I play, but I'm still not even thinking like, all right, let me put this out or nothing like that. So fast forward, I get and what made me get back on my artist game was, you know how Spotify does your end of the year wrap up and they show you your numbers? So this is like 2-3 years have gone by where I'm, you know, Wrap Up is sending me my numbers. But again, at the same time, I'm not promoting those songs. I'm not putting out nothing new. Just off what I've done, they're sending me my info. So every year I'm getting more and more. I might have had like almost 500,000 the first time I seen it. And it was like, dang, I had 500,000 streams just on Spotify. All right, that's kind of dope. The next year was like 600 something. And I'm like, it just had me start thinking like, dang, bro, like, if you could do 600,000 streams just on Spotify and, you know, all of these countries and all of these Shazams or whatever, like, imagine if you actually put out new content and put out music videos and, like, really just, you know, put effort back into it. Mm. Your numbers will resonate that. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
I started getting on that. So, cool. I put out a record called ABC, like, 2 years ago. I'm gonna say about 2 years ago. So shout out to my other homies, upstate homies, Griselda.
Yeah.
My homie Benny the Butcher.
Yeah. I was just talking to my DJ about Benny. Cause when I was on at BLK, he was my DJ, DJ Big Rob. He was the DJ.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and we developed a very, very, very good relationship. And you know, we was talking about the growth of Benny. So it's funny you mentioned that.
Yeah. So I link with Benny here in Atlanta. And but at this point, I'm back. Like, you know what? I'll do the artist thing, but I haven't really jumped into it yet. Mm-hmm. I'm just kind of still in the mindset of it, like gearing tours and I'm doing stuff, but not like that much. I'm just kind of, you know, getting my foot in when I feel like it.
Yeah.
You know? So me and Benny do the remix to the ABC record.
Okay.
Cool. We do the remix, Benny on it, and this is maybe 2 months ago. So we do the remix. We still ain't even out yet. This is new information.
I was just about to say, is it out?
Nah, it ain't out. Let me tell you. So we do the record and we shoot the video. So the song is done, the video is done. As I talk to you right now, the video is done, song done. It's on my laptop right now. So as we're about to shoot the video, the first day that I schedule the video shoot, you know what I mean? I get the Airbnb, I set up the whole location. Like, all you got to do is show up.
Mm.
Cool. Something happens early that day. It hit me like, hey, emergency came up. He had to shoot back to Buffalo. So I'm like, damn, I got everything set up for the video shoot today, like in 3-4 hours from now.
Man, so, I think I see where this is going. And if this happens, I'm about to flip. I just want you to know that.
So, like, all right, Benny's not available.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of my folks is like, G, just cancel everything, G. So I called to cancel it. I'm about to cancel it. I called the video guy. Shout out to Motive Films. I called him like, hey, yo, Benny had an emergency. Like, what's up? He like, man, I'm pulling up at the location right now. I'm literally parking my car. So I'm like, all right, don't trip. I'm coming. So I got like an hour to figure out something else to shoot.
Yeah.
So I'm like going through records and all of that, and I came across GPA and was just like, I've been in my catalog for a couple years, and
yeah,
but I have to shoot something.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. So that was kind of the within an hour audible that I was like, all right, now we switching, we shooting this instead. We didn't have no treatment really for it. We had to come up with a treatment within, you know, 30 minutes, and we shot it.
Came out really good too.
Thank you. I really appreciate good.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
Especially so knowing the story behind it now too. That's wild.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yo, so we like, all right, cool. We shot the GPA video. So now I have GPA shot without ABC, but I'm still just kind of holding it because I'm really trying to get a little arsenal together before I start shooting.
Mm.
You know what I mean? I want to get all my bullets lined up before I start shooting. So yeah. I'm like, nah, I'm just going to put it out because I ain't got nothing else yet to like come back with it, you know what I'm saying? So I'm like, all right, cool, I cuff it. Then maybe a month later, not even a month, maybe 2 weeks later, he back, hey, yo, I'm in town this weekend, can we shoot this weekend? I set it up, we shoot the video, long story short. So of course, the joint with Benny is the one that I and everybody else associated with the video or the song wanna see. But I feel like I gotta get GPA out the clip first, so to speak, you know what I'm saying? So I was like, all right, cool. We're going to put GPA out first. Let's just drop that and get it out of the way. And then I can really hit him with this one. It's like the 1-2 punch. You know what I mean? I'm going to set him up with this one. Then I'm going to really hit him with this Benny record and this Benny video. So that's kind of like really how the GPA entire decision to put that out as the next single came about.
Wow.
My writing partner, J. Rel, been saying that for about a year, year and a half now, like, yo, GPA is a dope record, bro. You need to put that out.
Yeah, yeah.
Put it out. But like I said, at the time, I was just so off being an artist still. And I'm just like, dog, I ain't trying to do that right now.
You're really just trying to sell it to somebody.
Right, so I'm still in that mode. Like, nah, so Avery couldn't take it? Cool, let's sell it to one of these other dudes. Chris Brown, Trey Songz, any one of these dudes, let's sell it to anybody.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? So that's pretty much how it came about, bro. Like, wow. And, you know, I kind of, not to discredit GPA at all, but it was kind of one of the ones me putting it out was like, I need to just get this off of me so that I can make way for the next records to come.
Yeah, I don't know if that discredits it. I think that really, it speaks to a lot of things. And I think the first thing it speaks to is the fact that you got more, you know, so it was time for GPA, you know, like you got more ready to go. And, you know, I think the other thing is, I think it just, you know, it shows, man, like you are calculated because you have to be, but also you are open to, you know, going with your gut and going with, you know, your confidence and who you are. And it comes off as confident because you were able to make that decision. So I don't think it discredits the record at all. It's a good record and it's a great video. Like, it's, I think it's dope, bro. I think it's dope.
I appreciate it, my brother.
100%, man. Let everybody know where they can find that joint.
Yeah, you can get GPA on wherever you download or stream your music. GPA is available. The video itself can be found, you know, my YouTube link, which is in my bio on my Instagram, at June Summers. I'm at June Summers on everything. Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. I'm at June Summers. So like, you can tap in and find that video, find a song, and just start rocking with me. You ain't heard nothing just yet. You start rocking maybe with this one. I got a lot more to come. Like I said, next up is ABC.
Yeah.
Benny the Butcher. Next up after that, I got the record Flowers with my brother Music Soul Child coming. So it's a lot more coming. So, you know, just trying to stay tuned and just, you know, be consistent.
Man, I'm excited for you, bro. Like, I really hope that, you know, as you continue to roll things out, you're going to come back and say what up. You know what I mean?
I'm my mama, bro. I'm always going to tap in, man. That's always what's up, bro. You came from good people.
Yeah. Same good to you, people, bro.
good people told me about you, man.
Word,
nah,
bro.
Nah, let's run it. You know what I mean?
Fan.
Don't go nowhere. I'm coming to see you. And y'all don't want no problems.
It's Brian's World Live.